Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
James Maryland from 1043thefan.com in for Zach by today. Brandon Stokely is here in his normal perch, and let's head out to the hotline and bring in our own Cecil Lammy. And Cecil, some of your content this week on the website is focused on, you know what, the Broncos had a chance to measure kind of where they're at on Sunday against the Chiefs. Obviously, right. The final score would show that, hey, maybe they're not close. Is that the actual assessment, or how did you kind of look at what went down Sunday at Empower Field?
Yeah, and I understand that people are praising the defense and the Chiefs were 0-8 on third downs and Mahomes didn't do this and all that. I've talked to people around the Chiefs building, not PR guys and not reporters, but people that actually work for the team. They're like, yeah, we were trying some things. They were experimenting. They used the Broncos like a fourth preseason game. So while it is true, and of course I've seen all the numbers and I've watched all the film, the Chiefs weren't really putting the foot on the gas or even really on cruise control. It was more coasting against the Denver Broncos. So, you know, there's some things to take away, but when you really break it down, the Chiefs weren't even trying, and they kicked the crap out of the Broncos.
Cecil,
that's not a good sign.
No, Cecil, thanks for joining us, buddy. What do you make of the reports that after the game there was guys yelling at each other, you know, infighting there, defensive guys yelling at the offensive guys? What'd you make of that?
I don't mind that at all, Stoke, and you could speak more to this than anybody on the station because, you know, things get heated in locker rooms. I don't like Shelby Harris lunging at Vic Fangio. You know, that's another level. Yell at the guy, yell back, you know, kiss and make up at the end or whatever, but don't lunge at your head coach. That's not a good look. And as far as like the Bradley Chubb thing, you know, everyone I talk to says Chubb's becoming that leader. So yeah, good, lead. Go out there, get in some guy's kitchen. If they need to get their stuff together, I thought it was funny Drew Lock didn't even edit that out when he talked about it. Yeah, if they need to get in someone's face and say, hey, get your stuff together, good, because this team is bad right now. It's bad football. It's bad performances. And if the coaches aren't going to do it, the players have to self-police. So, yeah, Bradley Chubb, do it all day. Get in someone's kitchen. Take that leadership reins that he's already doing and turn this thing around somehow, some way. There's talent on this team. This team is better than their record indicates, but I'm not going to fall over myself, you know, just praising them or making excuses for them, saying everything's okay and it's all right and it's just COVID and no preseason. Like, that's a bunch of bunk. It's a bunch of excuses. I'm sick of it.
Cecil, you know, sometimes this can work when there's these sort of issues on the sideline, right? I'm thinking back to 1994. I'm going in my Wayback Machine. But it's Steve Young just losing it in a 40-8 blowout loss to the Eagles at Candlestick Park, and he wants to fight George Seifert. Like, they're having to hold him back because he got pulled from the game, and he felt like that was Seifert kind of blaming him for the results. And, you know, turned around and they wound up winning the Super Bowl that year. But that was also a team that was really, really good. They just had a bad day and were kind of off to a bad start, and they were able to turn it around. To me, when you're a bad team and you've been bad for 4 years, this just – I hear what you're saying, and I like the passion, and some of it can be good. But also, couldn't this be a sign of just total dysfunction? And isn't this a little worrisome that – Vic Fangio doesn't have a grasp of this thing, and it could just all unravel. Am I being paranoid, or is that potentially on the table?
That's potentially coming up. I think it's a little premature right now, James, to be honest. And I get what you're saying. All of your reasonings or fears or concerns are realistic. However, I don't think they're there yet. Just being around this team, and I can't be as close as you. It's not like I'm in the locker room this year because of COVID and the protocols and all that. But here's where the Shelby Harris thing becomes dangerous. Shelby Harris's voice is heard in that locker room. You know, love him or hate him, the guys in that locker room really listen to him. So what's he saying? You know, is it truly water under the bridge with Vic Fangio? If it is, then Shelby Harris will be a strong voice of positivity and influence within that locker room. And if it's not, then that's where division is sewn in. And I understand, you know, PR guys would go nuts and be like, "It's no, there's no division." Yeah. There was division when Aqib Talib was calling out the offense and calling out John Elway for calling him soft and saying, "Don't draft soft-ass QBs." I've been around this team when it's divided. It's not divided now. Not yet, and hopefully it doesn't get there.
Yeah, I tend to take a little bit of a different approach there, Cecil. Like, if you want to be a leader, and I think great leaders, you got to, you know, lead in different ways in different areas. When a group, when a young group, and we're talking about sports here, obviously, when a young group offensively is struggling, I think the worst approach is to yell and scream at them, because that's not going to make them do better. You got to try to uplift those guys. So I think Bradley Chubb is going about this the wrong way. Love the fact that he wants to lead. He doesn't like that they're losing. But yelling and screaming at Drew Lock and Noah Fant or Albert O or Jerry Jeudy and all these young players is not going to make those guys play better.
Well, then we got to find the key. We got to find the recipe. I don't want to sound like the old man, get off my lawn. Football is all about overweight guys and windbreakers yelling at you. And I understand that today's employee and today's player is different than in years past, right? And I'm not saying that such a bunch of snowflakes. I'm not saying that. I won't go there. I think it's dumb when people go there, honestly. Put a bunch of dresses on them. They're snowflakes. Like, yeah, that's dumb.
Well,
I'm not going to say
I think it's different.
I'll say you
got
to find a way to motivate guys.
You know, coaches yelling at you. You know, coaches yelling at you is one thing, you know, in practice or right. You know. But I think now, you know, every coach is different and unique, too. And most of the guys that are yelling, the coaches that are yelling are the offensive line coaches and the defensive line coach, right? I mean, those are the guys that yell. But when you're dealing with, you know, quarterbacks and receivers and, you know, that's I just think that that's a wrong approach with the Broncos in this situation for a guy like Bradley Chubb, who a guy that they probably look up to, is yelling and screaming at him.
Yeah, the frustration is certainly mounting, and what we need to be mindful of next, something that I'm writing for 104.3thefan.com, is are the Broncos buyers or sellers at the trade deadline? Because the worst thing you can be is bad and then sit on your hands and be like, "Oh, we're fine. What do you mean? It's COVID and it's injuries and it's no preseason." Yeah, it's a bunch of bunk. Every team's dealing with that. You kidding me? Come on now. Let's talk realistically about this team. And when I've gone over the buyers list, like Tack McKinley's on the trade block right now.
Why would the Broncos buy? Why would the Broncos buy?
Because they're not good enough. I mean, honestly, collecting talent. And
so to me, that says sell.
Situation.
That says sell.
Well, and sell, there's not much to sell.
Right,
honestly.
That's the problem. That's the problem.
That
you can't
is
sell
big
anything.
Problem. So I'm like, buy to later sell? I'm not sure, but I'm going over the list of players and the players that could be available, maybe a Miles Jack, Tack McKinley already on the trade block. Like, and maybe the Broncos would be in consideration there. I'd at least like to see some moves. The absolute worst thing that you can do is look at this team and think you're okay, because they're not. So add some talent, ship off some talent. Can we actually get a good rebuild here? Can we actually get a real rebuild here? Have they just torn it down? Hey, 18 retires, Peyton in the sunset, 50's in the books. If they just actually rebuilt then, they'd probably be a powerhouse right now. You know, if you would have just taken the time. Instead, we're going to compete and rebuild at the same time. It doesn't work that way. This league is made so that you can turn things around quickly if you do it the right way. And obviously what the Broncos have been doing isn't working.
No, and look, they need the reality check this year just like they have seemingly every year since 2015, right? Like, they kept playing Joe Flacco last year because they were convinced they were still in the playoff chase. That was with six playoff teams. Now with seven, they're going to convince themselves until the bitter end, so they very well may be buyers. I think the
right.
The obviously the position, though, that they need to figure out, hey, are we any good here? Is it quarterback? And
yeah,
I think a lot of the reaction on social media and on the text line this week, I think has been overly dramatic. I'm not ready to say Drew Lock is a bust by any means. I came into this year saying, hey, it's 16 tests. It's going to turn out to be roughly 13 if he stays healthy the rest of the year.
Right.
He flunked the test on Sunday against the Chiefs. I don't think he was very good. But that doesn't mean he can't be good. He just, and this is what I wrote about Monday, is I expected some stinkers. Here's my problem, Cecil. Those stinkers haven't been offset with any flashes, right? If you look back, and again, my way back machine, 1983, John Elway was terrible in a lot of games as a rookie, right? He was lining up behind the guard. Like, he was awful. But But late in the year, they had a game against the Colts. They're down 19-0 after three quarters, which tells you the quarterback wasn't doing anything. And all of a sudden, he pulls a rabbit out of his hat, throws three touchdown passes. They win 21-19, and we're all saying, hey, maybe they got something here. We need some of those moments, because even when he hasn't flunked the test, Drew Lock has been pretty mediocre. Like, they're just, we haven't seen anything. Is that too high of an expectation that we at least need to see some flashes?
Drew Lock's best pass was incomplete, because it was that throw to Deshaun Hamilton. That was a dime.
Yeah.
That's one. I watched Justin Herbert. He's throwing dimes multiple times in multiple games against some of the greatest quarterbacks out there. And I know Drew Brees isn't on the field playing defense, but you're going toe-to-toe with Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Pat Mahomes, and didn't even know you're going to play. Like, look how Herbert is flashing. And by the way, might I add, when I had heard down at the Shrine game and then the Senior Bowl, and I had reported it on our airwaves, like, hey, Joe Burrow's probably going to be the number one pick, but I'm hearing that Justin Herbert is in consideration. Does anyone doubt that now? I know that D-Mac and Tyler lost their mind. I'm not picking on them, because other people did as well. They lost their mind about how could Justin Herbert be? Look at him play. Look at the kid. Kid's the real deal. Now, Drew Lock, is it him or is it Shurmur? I'm putting a lot of blame on Shurmur, because you have a quarterback that's not as comfortable in the whole playbook as he was with Rich Scangarello. By the way, that's an old take. I've been saying that for 2 months now. Like, hey, he looked better under Scangarello. Pat Shurmur refuses to help him out in terms of giving him, like, easy reads. Sure, he's reading half the field. So you can sit there and complain as a coach and be like, why doesn't my quarterback know my whole offense? Why can't he read the whole field? You can do that, and you'll find your ass in the unemployment line. Or you could say, hey, my quarterback's only reading half the field. He's young. I got to hold his hand a little bit. Maybe even in the headset, I got to go with the ball before the play. That's fine. Hell, Jared Goff was like that for 2 years. So why isn't Shurmur more open to doing that, giving him high-low reads? Run a drag route. You know, where's the sale concept? Give him two reads and tell him to run. And make sure to tell him to slide right. I'm 16, Drew Lock fall, and then, you know, oh, my God, we're all on pins and needles. Like, dude, come on, slide right, fall right. Let's go. Stay healthy and play better, because the only thing that matters, record doesn't matter. Everybody stay healthy, and Drew Lock, can you play or not? That's all I want to know this year. And Shurmur's got to help him out, because it seems like there's a flat-out refusal to set things up and do what Drew Lock does best. He has assets. He has skill. I was watching him at practice today, and I was, you know, of course he wasn't getting rushed or whatever, but I was watching the weight transfer with his beat, and it's so inconsistent. But there are times when he can make those dime throws. So help him out and help him make more of those. There's something there. This is a guy that's not devoid of skill. But you have to help him. He's a young quarterback, and at best, he's Derek Carr. And by the way, another thing that I'm writing at 1043thefan.com is the chances of him working out are very, very slim. Very slim. And this coaching staff, Shurmur specifically, isn't helping him out. If he works out, he's Derek Carr. That's if he, like, turns it around and hits and it's the greatest ever. He's Derek Carr. I don't know how exciting that is for Broncos fans, but that's the God's honest truth. And right now, the chances of Lock being the guy are incredibly low.
Cecil, great stuff as always. You're one of the few people, I'm sure, that is glad the World Series is over. NBA Finals are over. That means Nick and Cecil back on every night from 7 to 10. We'll be checking it out, hearing more of those opinions. Awesome stuff. We appreciate you joining us.
All right, be good, fellas.
All right, there he goes, Cecil Lammy. And Stokey had some really strong words to say there about the Broncos offensive coordinator. That's been a theme on the station the last couple of days. One of our hosts may have discovered why Pat Shurmur is calling games the way he is, and I want to know if you agree with what he has to say. We'll talk about that coming up next. Stoke, Cecil Lammy is never one to be short of opinions, but man, he was fueling fire there in the last segment in that interview.
Made us go over break. Break,
Cecil, stop, break, yeah. Cut, short, yeah. Let's go.
Like 3 minutes. He was just rolling.
Gracious.
Yeah, he was like filibuster.
Deep breath here.
Yeah.
We need the mute button or something, you know, that they had for the last, whatever you call it,
debate. Yeah, for the last debate. Yeah.
That's what we need.
He was on this like filibuster, but I think the things he said, were primarily accurate. I think there's a lot of reasons to be upset with the way Pat Shurmur is handling Drew Lock. This is another thing where I think you and I agree, and I think you and I were ahead of the curve. Look, Rich Scangarello last year, he was not great, especially early, but he was dealing for the first eight games with a statue at quarterback. Then he had Brandon Allen, who'd never played. Then he had Drew Locke, who had never played. And I thought he did a pretty good job with Drew Locke. I thought the last five games, he put him in a good position. Drew Locke never had that deer in the headlights look. He seemed comfortable. So I thought it was a gamble. I don't care who they bring in to change from that. And Pat Shurmur so far isn't working out. In three full games with Drew Locke, they're averaging 16 points a game. That's not going to win many games in this league. It just doesn't seem like it's clicking. On Monday on the morning show, Stink put out a theory as to why he thinks Pat Shurmur is calling the games the way he is.
Pat Shurmur is calling plays like he's going to get another opportunity to be a head coach. He's calling plays like a young offensive coordinator that wants to prove that I can develop a quarterback, that we can be a big strike offense, and a big strike offense and developing a young quarterback is like Viagra to 80-year-old owners, and I'm going to get another opportunity. I've got news for you. You're not getting another opportunity as a head coach. It's not going to happen. I'm not trying to be a jerk. It's not going to – I understand how this business works. You've been a head coach in Cleveland. You've been a head coach for the Giants. You're not getting another opportunity to be a head coach. So quit being the big strike offense and take what a defense gives you and understand what you guys are.
Well, look, I mean, I don't know about that. I'm not going that far. I think that might be a little bit unfair. I think when you look at the offense, I mean, every offense wants to take shots down the football field. Every offense wants to be explosive. I mean, every offensive coordinator wants to be aggressive. I mean, that's just what you want to do.
Right.
And you want to develop your quarterback. I mean, that's part of it. But you can be a successful offense also and get a head coaching job if you just go down the field methodically and dink and dunk and take check downs. And then when the time's right, you take the big play. So I don't look at it from that perspective. I just look at it like Pat Shurmur's just not doing a good job. It's not because mm-hmm. he wants to be a head coach. It's just because he's just not doing a good job. And maybe they need to dial some stuff back a little bit. I certainly do think that the offseason, you know, not only hurt the players, but it hurt Pat Shurmur and figuring out how to design an offense around the talent that he has. But I don't look at it from the point of view that he's operating this way because he wants to be a head coach. Because I think Pat Shurmur knows if there's any chance, I agree with Mark, I don't think he'll ever be another head coach. He's 0-2. If there's any chance to be a head coach, it's just by being successful as an offensive coordinator and developing your quarterback. You don't have to, throw the football down the field to be successful as an offense and develop a quarterback.
There's a lot of teams that are, you know, making the transition to young quarterbacks where if Pat Shurmur took Drew Locke this year and in 13 games, you know, had him with a passer rating where he's in the top, I don't know, 12 of the league, I think there'd be teams that would look at him and go, hey, maybe he can help with our young quarterback. Like, I think that would get more attention than, hey, how many big plays did they have and how many deep balls did they throw? And, boy, they were a highlight reel. Like, I guess they kind of go hand in hand. If you got a lot of highlight reels, you're probably going to be a fairly highly rated quarterback, but yeah, I don't know that's why he's calling the plays this way. I think this kind of, you know, what he does, right? Like if you talk to people who covered the Giants, this is a lot of what they do. Daniel Jones took a lot of shots down the field and it had to endure a lot of shots, right? He got hit a lot as a result of that.
That's who he is, right? I mean, that's who he is. He did it when he was a head coach. He's going to continue to do it. That's what Drew's talked about. You know, Drew talks a lot about it. That's what they coach. Hey, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to take some shots down the field. I don't think it's because he wants to be a head coach. That's just his MO. That's who he is.
Yeah. But the other part of it in, I don't know if this was part of why you were worried about it or not at the time they made the change, but I also looked at Pat Shurmur's resume. And I know he became a head coach twice, so obviously, you know, people had thought highly of him. But man, his offense, I think, has been in the top 10 three times. Twice with the Eagles, which was both those times. That's Chip Kelly's offense, right?
Chip Kelly was calling the play, so it's not his. So Pat Shurmur, he didn't get credit for that.
Right. And then 2017, the Case Keenum year with Minnesota.
Yeah.
Which I think people look at that and go, wow, if you do that with Case Keenum, that's why you got the Giants job.
That's right.
That's looking more and more and more like, well, that was the aberration, right? And so there really isn't this history of him developing on quarterbacks, which is why I was concerned about the hire. One, change for change's sake is always a little scary to me. And I think Rich Gangarola was the scapegoat, and I think Pat Shurmur came in here, and everybody thought he would fix things. Like,
well. Well, for me, James, the one thing real quick was I watched the Giants-Cowboys game, first game of the season a year ago, and went to that game. So I went to the game, and I watched that game, and I watched Pat Shurmur call those plays, and I walked away and said, what is this guy doing?
Right,
right. This was after he hired. I brought this story up and said it. And that's the way I walked away from that game. I questioned a few of those calls that he had, some third and shorts and fourth and short, and how he handled those situations. And in certain situations, they didn't look like they were prepared for things. And that's the way I walked away from that game. And I just, you know, like, I didn't really like what Pat Shurmur was doing there. I don't know Pat Shurmur. And next thing you know, he's hired here. So I mentioned that, and that was my first impression of Pat Shurmur. And that was it really for me. I was going to see how he operates here with Drew Lock, and obviously it's been more of the same, and it just hasn't been good enough at all. He's got to do a better job of implementing things that's going to help this offense. And now, even more so now, we got to rein Drew in a little bit, and he's a big part of that. We got to stop throwing the football down the field, you know, like it's going out of style. We got to try to get some drives sustained and take some check downs and let guys do some things with the football after the catch. But just throwing the football down the field's not working.
Yeah, no, Pat Shurmur is off to a rough start. He is certainly struggling, but he's not alone. There's another Bronco whose season is off to a really rough start. Can we chalk it up to rookie struggles, or is it a sign of things to come? We'll answer that question coming up next. Stoke, earlier in the show, we were talking about how Garrett Bowles has been a pleasant surprise at left tackle. He's the number one ranked tackle through 7 weeks by Pro Football Focus. So that's a positive for this Broncos team, for the offense, for the much maligned offensive line. In that group up front, though, there are some other guys that aren't necessarily playing as well. One in particular is off to a rough start. Lloyd Cushenberry, he struggled against the Chiefs. He got beat for a sack. He got flagged for holding. You know, look, he's a rookie. He's played 6 games now. You know, it's going to be there are going to be, you know, some things that are not going to be perfect. But are you concerned at what the Broncos are getting, you know, from the center position? Is this guy someone that, you know, is going to be a question mark moving forward? Or is he showing you enough that you think, you know what, there's something to build on here. It's just rookie struggles.
I'm not concerned at all. Look, I mean, what'd you expect? This guy wasn't a top 5 pick, top 10
right.
pick. He's a third round pick. With no offseason and a new offense, trying to learn the NFL game, going up against some studs. You know, you look at Chris Jones and company for the Chiefs. I mean, you got some good defensive linemen that you're going up against. There's going to be some struggles. There's going to be some bad plays. Hey, I no concern, no worries at all. Now, if it continues next year, then yes, I'll revisit it. But right now, I think it comes down to what were your expectations for Lloyd Cushenberry? Do you expect him to come in here and be a Pro Bowler or be a guy that's not going to have issues? Well, then yeah, you probably are concerned. But I didn't expect that. I expected some struggles throughout his first year and some ups, some downs. It's not an easy thing to do to just jump on the offensive line and, you know, be a center and not have any preseason games and not have any offseason stuff to go through. It's a tough thing to do. So I think all of that could look at and point to as why he might be struggling to a certain degree in certain games. And it hasn't been awful. There's been some moments that you obviously wouldn't like to see, but it doesn't concern me right now at all.
Well, yeah, and I'm with you. I think you're right. I think the expectations part of it was big. I think, you know, you had to be realistic with him as a rookie, as a third round pick. He's going to come in here and there's going to be some ups and downs. The other part of it is who he was replacing, right? Like, and I know there's not a lot of us who sit around and, you know, watch the tape and just, you know, study the center play after play after play. But it doesn't seem to me watching the games. Look, I know he got beat for a sack and I know he had the holding penalty. It's 2 negative plays, but it's 2. You can't just dismiss them. You can't have 2 every game, but it's also not the end of the world. It doesn't seem like there's an appreciable difference between Connor McGovern and what we're getting out of Lloyd Cushenberry. I don't look at it and say, well, that was just a colossal mistake by John Elway and letting Connor McGovern leave, and now they're trying to go with a rookie. It seems like they're getting about the same level of play to me. Am I off base, or is that kind of what you're seeing too?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you don't see a huge drop off there between the two. And, you look at what Connor McGovern's making, you look at what Lloyd Cushenberry's making, and it's like, okay, you take that for the price that you're getting it at. So, I think with any young football player, especially this year, given the circumstances, it's hard to, you know, cast judgment on them right now and say, hey, yeah, I'm really disappointed in your play. A lot going on, and a lot to overcome for these young guys. And it's not an easy thing to do. That's what I want to remind people. I don't want to make excuses for them, but man, this is a tough situation. I just kind of put myself in their shoes. And I just remember how hard it was and difficult it was for me making that transition. And I had the whole offseason to learn the playbook. I had, you know, preseason games. I had all those things. Those guys have nothing. They're just kind of thrown into the fire. And Lloyd Cushenberry, hey, you're starting game one. You know, Jerry Jeudy, we're counting on you. So it's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do. It's difficult. But saying all that, so, you know, I'll give them some passes here, but at the same time, you know, if this is a trend continuing in year two, now I'll be disappointed. Hopefully he can correct some of these mistakes, and hopefully at the end of the season we can look at some of these young guys that have struggled. When you look at a Cushenberry, you look at a Hamler, you look at a Jeudy, hopefully by the end of the year they're not making these same mistakes, and there's a lot more positives than there are negatives.
Yeah, yeah. Overall, though, I think Michael Ojemudia has been the best rookie of this class so far.
Yeah, I agree.
Through seven games, he's been the guy you watch and like, man, that guy looks like he can play at this level. He looks like he's ready to go. The rest of them kind of, you know, flashes, and you hope you can see more consistency. Or, you know, in the case of KJ Hamler, it's like, man, can we see anything? It's definitely been a disappointing start to the 2020 season for the Broncos rookie class overall. All right, so speaking of disappointing starts, Drew Lock, what's his mindset as he looks to bounce back from his awful performance on Sunday against the Chiefs? We'll hear from the starting quarterback coming up next. James Brown from 104.3TheFan.com sitting in for Zach Bye. And Stoke, we're about to hear from Drew Lock, his weekly meeting with the media. Anything in particular you're kind of hoping to hear from the Broncos quarterback as he tries to rebound from a bad performance against the Chiefs?
I think with Drew, the one thing I've always liked, he's always been self-critical of himself and been really, you know, looks at himself and the things that he can do better and, you know, is very open and honest about those things. So I've always liked that approach from him. I think maybe, hey, just what the feeling is in the locker room, really. That to me is more interesting than, you know, will he start throwing more checkdowns? Will he take the, you know, the profits now and the guys that are open instead of throwing the ball so much down the football field? What's the dynamics of this football team? Is it going to be a big deal? Could it be an issue? Or is this just one of those things that happens sometimes in sports and that's it? So that to me is what I really looking forward to hearing from Drew and from Vic.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it ties into the leadership void conversation we were having earlier in the show of, you know, look, he's a young guy. He's started 9 games. He's essentially played 8. So it's hard to be the leader, but he's also playing the position that is the default leader, right? So I think you want to start to hear some things from him that sort of suggest that the situation in the locker room is under control. People are on the same page. We get why people are frustrated. We need to do our part. Those kind of things. I'm also like, I don't want to hear the Brock Osweiler win the press conference type of cliches, though, right? So it's a fine line of, you know, what do you want to hear from him that suggests he gets it and he's, you know, one of the leaders of this team and not just out there, you know, trying to say what we all want to hear. That's the trick to this. You don't want the guy that just wins the presser.
No, you certainly don't. And, you know, a lot's been said about, you know, Drew being too aggressive. Right. Yeah. You know, that's what we're looking at. Yeah. It was highlighted on the, during the game of, you know, forcing it down the field. And you see guys in the intermediate to lower range that are open. But I think when you look at those situations and I think Drew watching film with his coaches, hopefully they look at those and say, hey, you know, we like to be aggressive. Everybody wants to be aggressive, have an aggressive offense. But at the same time, when the play is there, and you see a guy open, don't wait for the next guy to come open 20 more yards down the field. Take that guy that's open. I think that's an important lesson for young quarterbacks to learn is, you know, Peyton said it all the time, don't pass up the prophet. Take the profit when it's right there. And it doesn't matter if you got a specific play on it. Don't hold out hope that that play down the football field is going to come open. If you see a guy open underneath, you take it and you move on to the next play. And I think Drew just has to get into that mode a little bit more than aggressive, aggressive, aggressive mode. And that comes with experience, but also comes from your coaches. How are his coaches teaching him? What are they coaching him to do?
Yeah, and, you know, I guess – that's another one, though, that I hear you say that, Stoke, and I agree with you, but it's a fine line for me, too, because what I don't want to see, remember Case Keenum's year where he was here?
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the season, it seemed like he threw a pick a game at least.
Yeah.
And then he just got shell-shocked, and he was captain checkdown.
Yes.
He was going with the easy throw all the time and wouldn't even look downfield. That balance of, yeah, you can't be Brett Favre, who just is always going for the home run because how many people are Brett Favre, but you also, boy, you don't want guys to just go into a shell and turn into Case Keenum and all they're doing is, you know, checking down to the back, throwing the safe, easy route. Like, that dink and dunk's going to get you nowhere.
No, you're right. I mean, you don't want that. Look, I mean, because this offense isn't good enough to have dink and dunk down the football field without screwing it up, right? So you're going to have to
right
make some big plays. But I think for Drew, the big thing is, and I would like to hear that. Hey, what are your coaches teaching you to do? You know, how are they coaching you? To be aggressive, be aggressive. Are they telling you to take some of those check down throws? So I'm interested to hear that. But I think for Drew also, and for a lot of young quarterbacks, it's knowing what the defense is doing and what they're trying to take away. And when they're taking away the deep stuff, then know when to go to the checkdowns. And when you do it quickly and you throw it on the money, now those checkdowns end up being great plays. And the guy that's best at doing it is Tom Brady. You know, he'll dink and dunk you to death, but he's so accurate with the football. He gets rid of the football so quickly and he knows where to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
So now those checkdowns are, you know, instead of 3 yards, it's 7, 8, 10 yards because he gets the ball out of his hands quickly and knows where to go with it. And I think that's what Drew has to learn is what are the defenses doing? What are they trying to take away from me? And then, boom, okay, I know where to go with the football right here. But to his defense, how can we expect him to be on top of that right now? It's like going from, you know, I don't know what they called it, Math 92 to, you know, calculus.
Yeah.
Just like that overnight with no learning in between. I mean, so he hasn't had any experience in this offense, and now all of a sudden we're expecting him to read defenses, know when to hit the check down, know all these different things, and I think that's a little bit unfair to him.
Yeah, and I guess for me, that's exactly how I would want it to be approached by Pat Shurmur and the rest of the coaching staff is, look, it's more about learning the offense and kind of learning what your options are and seeing the field rather than changing your mentality. Because I think if you start working on somebody's mentality, part of what excited me and excited Broncos country about Drew Locke during that 5-game stretch last year was the swagger he had. And a lot of people on social media talk about, oh, it's unearned swagger, and he's out there, you know, doing celebrations when he scores a touchdown, and he hasn't earned it yet. I get it, and, you know, I kind of can be the old school guy at times too, but I think his swagger is what gives him the chance to be special. I don't want to squelch that.
No.
So it definitely has to be a, look, you just got to teach him to see the field. Like some of those plays that they would show the other day, and they'd show the replay, and Noah Fant's running across the middle wide open. I don't think he's throwing it to Jerry Jeudy into triple coverage because he's going for the home run ball. I don't think he sees Noah Fant,
right,
which sounds crazy because it's right in the middle of the field, and how do you miss him? I just don't think he's seen it at this point.
No, I think you're right, too. And to go back to, you know, the swagger and stuff like that, it's hard to have swagger right now when you're not being successful.
Sure.
You know, last year we saw it all the time, you know, all the things they were doing so cute, you know, the Buzz Lightyear stuff is like, oh my gosh.
Right.
You know, everybody was like giddy about it and fine. I really don't care. But, you know, this year you're not seeing anything because you're not being successful. We saw a little bit after the touchdown run. That's great. That's fine. I mean, have some fun. Bring some excitement to the football field. But obviously it's not much fun and not much celebrating going on when you're not successful. But going back to, you know, the other things, yeah, you're right. I mean, I just don't think it's, you know, he gets locked into one guy sometimes a little bit too much and doesn't get off of that guy. Like, I'm going to hit this. You know, this is where I'm throwing the football. A little pre-snap already determining where he's going with the football. And I think, like I said a second ago, I think a lot of that hopefully has to do with just not knowing everything that's going on right now. The game moving fast, not knowing this offense inside and out, because of the new offense and the changing of the offensive coordinator and all those things that have happened this offseason haven't helped him. And haven't, you know, helped his development at all. And certainly it probably, you know, hurt it to a big degree here when you're looking at his play right now compared to what we saw last year. Now it's up to Pat Shurmur and Mike Shula to get this thing figured out and to get him rewired and to maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't like the, you know, simplification of an offense, but just call the stuff that you know that he feels comfortable with, and then that's it. It doesn't matter about the wins and the losses. We've talked about a lot about this. It doesn't matter about that stuff. It matters about Drew's development. And if you just got to simplify it as much as possible so he's got the reads and the progressions and the stuff that he's comfortable with, I'm good with it. The other thing I've been looking at, James, is, you know, saw a lot of this during training camp, only the few days I was out there. I don't think 3 days I got to go out there. A lot of the RPO stuff, you know, with Drew. And certainly I was advocating for Jeff Driscoll and they never ran it. But I think with Drew, you know, that was what he did in college. You know, that was what he did. It's shotgun RPOs. And, we saw it the one time that I recall, with Drew in the Tennessee game. And that's the one that Judy dropped. Mm-hmm. Pulled the ball out from the running back, threw it to Judy, and Judy just dropped it. But we really haven't seen many of those plays. I think we got to get back to doing things that Drew's comfortable with right now and not asking him to run this, you know, exotic offense that obviously we're not running very well right now.
Well, yeah, I'm with you. And it's one of the things I think Rich Gangarello did well at the end of last year was he simplified the offense without it being simple. Right? Like, it wasn't, we didn't watch games. We didn't see him put up 38 down in Houston. I know they had a pick six or a scoop and score, but still 30 points offensively because they were just running, you know, vanilla and basic. But it did seem like it was simplified to where he knew where to go with the football and kind of, you know, what his one and two and maybe third read was. Like, look, I was watching the details, one of the details clips with Peyton Manning, and he was talking about Tom Brady, and he showed Tom going to his fifth read on a touchdown throw. And he was talking about how, yeah, but this is a play he's been running for 20 years. And he couldn't believe it took him that long to, you know, implement some of the stuff that Tom did in New England down in Tampa. They kind of ran new stuff. It's like, just let him do what he's been doing because it's automatic for him. That's the part where, you know, when you've started 9 games, you've really only played 8. There's nothing that's automatic. So it's got to be simplified of, hey, here's one, here's two. If not, it's, you know, it's take off and run or do something else. But that's where those RPO plays to me seem like they fall into that of, you know, they're not simple, but they're simplified, right? There's one or two options and then you're off to the races. That's the kind of stuff they need to do.
Yeah. Just whatever it is, you know, it could be RPOs. It could be, you know, more quick game stuff. Everybody's run quick game stuff. Just 3-step drop, right? Slant, drag. You know, you run a 3-yard slant, you run drag straight to the sideline, a curl route, drag route, just stuff like that. Just really, really simplify some things and put those in the game plan to where, you know these reads. It's curl to flat or it's flat to curl. You know, if the drag's there, you just throw the drag. Things like that to kind of, you know, not have him holding the football so long. That's part of it, right? When you're throwing the football down the field, guess what? You got to hold the football. You know, I do like some of the keeper games and some of the things that they're doing to get him outside of the pocket. But man, you know, hey, Drew, you got to take the intermediate stuff when it's there. It's not all about throwing it down the football field, but simplify the offense and give him some things that he has done in the past to help the reads, to help the progressions, to help him feel more comfortable. And if you do that now, you know, later in the season, when this thing is progressing and getting later in the season, now hopefully now you can implement some of the stuff that you would have implemented down the road earlier in the offseason, excuse me, whenever you would have had OTAs and mini camps. And
miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.